Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
This hour on the programme, as part of Manx Radio's coverage in the build-up to September's House of Keys general election, we're joined by another of the new candidates intending to stand. Today's election 2016 candidate interview is with 29-year-old Laurie Hooper, who's the Liberal Vannin Party candidate for Ramsey. Good afternoon, Laurie, and welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon, thanks for having me.
Not at all. Now, set your stall out, tell us a bit about yourself. So people who don't know you, you're 29 years old. Tell us a bit about your background, your family and your career to date.
Well, I was born in Cardiff in South Wales. I moved to the island in 1999. My parents moved over here, got work. My dad works for Barclays. My mum was a teacher at Alden School in Ramsey. I'm a chartered accountant. I work for a local CSP, local accountancy firm. I'm currently a serving Ramsey Town Commissioner and in May was elected chairman of Ramsey Town Commission.
Okay. Now, that's I think this is your first term, isn't it, as a commissioner?
This is my second term.
Second term, first term as chairman,
I think. That's right, first
year. Yeah, it's not very long to serve as a commissioner before you go to national politics. And I think you've said that, you know, you feel as though there's unfinished business as far as Ramsey Commission is concerned. Are you not bailing out a little bit too soon from that to get involved with the big boys?
I think it's unfortunate that the timing has panned out the way it has, to be honest. There's a lot of things, a lot of changes happening, a lot of things that I would really like to have got finished and got over the finishing line that government has started to do, that we as a local authority have been doing. But it's just one of those things, you can't wait any longer. You know, if I could turn around and say, can you hold off the general election for a couple of years, that would be great. But I don't have that power, unfortunately, so
well,
we know where we are.
You've obviously had an ambition to be an MHK because you stood in 2011 as well, didn't you?
Yes, yeah, that's right.
Okay, and were you standing as part of a Lib Van thing last time, or is that a new decision?
No, in 2011 I stood as an independent, and it's subsequent to that I joined the Lib Van party, and I've been with them now for 5 years, near enough.
Yeah. And do you think that party politics has got a future in the Isle of Man, or do you think that just a small core of people, the Liberal Vannin Party particularly, or maybe the Manx Labour Party or somebody like that, can make an effective challenge to government?
I think the important thing that we need over here is a structured opposition, and we don't have that under the current system. You have the Council of Ministers with its collective responsibility that says and does one thing, works very much as a party, as a grouping. You don't really have a structured, effective opposition to that. Now, Lord Lisvain's report sets out the option of scrutiny committees, which I actually think might work better than a party system. But at the moment, under the system that we have, yes, I think we do need some kind of party politics just to make sure that we have effective scrutiny of government.
Okay. But, I mean, there'll always be the block vote, won't there? So how many people would need to be not part of government to have an effective opposition?
Well, there won't always be the block vote. If you vote in enough reform candidates this time around, I can see that disappearing pretty quickly.
Okay.
Really, to make an effective opposition, you only need a handful. Sometimes three or four people would be enough, I think, to effectively stand up and stand together and say, no, actually, we're not having any of this.
Okay. So you're an accountant by trade. And what sort of basis does that give you, do you think, to stand for national politics?
Well, I don't really think the particular profession you have, it makes a great deal of difference. I think the main thing that you need when you want to stand for any kind of political role, local authority, national politics, is just a desire to help make things better and a desire to serve and some real commitment and passion for the issues. I think if you've got that, it doesn't matter what your background is. It doesn't matter whether you're a professional, whether you're a plumber, whether you're a teacher, whether you're a doctor, a dentist. It's irrelevant.
Yeah. You know,
the important thing is, are you willing to serve? Are you willing to commit yourself?
And what do you think you could bring to a government then? What sort of skills, talents, what I mean, are you very good at being able to assimilate information, for example? Are you the sort of person who can always see the holes in arguments?
I think the answer to those questions is yes to both of them. The main thing I'd like to be able to bring is a fresh perspective, a little bit of enthusiasm. The main problem we have with our House of Keys, at the moment, is that it isn't very representative of our population as a whole. It's full of sort of older men. Whereas realistically, you could do with
playing the age card.
You could do with some younger people. You could do with some more women. You could do with a broader section of society, I think, in there.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing I'd like to bring.
Okay. You talk about a need for a smaller and more effective government. But, I mean, the problem with that is that whenever there are any cuts made, post-close, move to outsource anything, there's a huge outcry from people. So how could you make it smaller without damaging the economy as such?
Well, the important thing to bear in mind with government is it's there to provide a service. It's not there to be the beginning and the end of the Isle of Man. It isn't there to drive the economy. That's not what government does. It's there to provide services for people. So what we have to do is engage with people and find out exactly what services do we think government should be providing, what should the quality, what should the level of those services be, and then find a way of delivering those services to that level, which is affordable and cost effective.
That just sounds like a big town council. You say that it's not there to drive the economy. Surely that's one of the prime jobs of government, to drive the economy and to facilitate people who will then get the sleeves rolled up and make the economy more vibrant.
So you've just said two completely different things there. Either we're driving the economy or we're facilitating people who drive the economy. Government's role is to sit down and create an environment in which entrepreneurs, hardworking people can go out there, create jobs, create money, create wealth. That's the private sector that does that. Government does not create wealth.
Good answer.
Anyone that turns around and says it's government's job to grow the economy, that's not true. It's government's job to sit down and actually enable private individuals, private companies to grow the economy, to go out there and win business, to compete. So it's government's job to support people, to support these industries as much as it can do, whilst at the same time not getting too involved and getting its fingers in everything. Government cannot run commercial operations. We've seen that in the past, and it shouldn't be.
Well, interestingly then, how do you feel about the role of local authorities compared to the national government? Because a lot of people think that national government is trying to do too much, and an awful lot of what it does could be much better handled by commissioners and councils.
I would completely agree with that. I've been saying that for 4 and a bit years now whilst on the commission. There's lots of functions that local authorities should be doing. Local services should be provided locally. Even things that are a bit more bigger, things like planning, for example, that should be done locally. There's no reason for central government to be getting so involved with absolutely everything that is done. Hedge trimming, street sweeping, all of this was central government until very, very recently. And you've got to sit and wonder why that was the case. You have local authorities. Let's make better use of them. Let's give people in those areas more control, more direct control and direct influence over services provided where they live.
All right, well, playing devil's advocate on that then, is it fair to ask people who are usually unpaid commissioners, I know that you get attendance allowances and things like that, but you're effectively unpaid, is it fair to for the paid politicians to be handing work over to the unpaid politicians, the volunteers, if you like?
Well, actually, most of the work done, for example, at Ramsey Town Commissioners is done by our very well-paid, very well-trained staff. They're the guys that come in and do the day-to-day. You know, as a commissioner, yes, you're unpaid, but it's your job to provide governance, to provide oversight to these functions, not to get down and dirty and actually do the work.
Okay.
So as a local authority, you have people who are skilled and are very committed to doing the jobs they do. Why can't they be asked to do more? Why? I'm sure they'd be willing to engage and do more work.
Do you think that MHKs sometimes get bogged down in constituency issues? I mean, you're asking for the people of Ramsey to vote for you. You've got to be seen to be doing a good job for the people of Ramsey, but you're a national politician, so you know you're also looking after the whole of the Isle of Man. Do those two things square?
I think they do. I think it's important to be able to deliver sort of on local community issues, but at the same time remember that your primary function is to be delivering for the island as a whole, and it is more about working in partnership with your commissioners. It's more about working in partnership with the organisations in your town. I think a lot of MHKs get bogged down in constituency issues because they try and do everything themselves, whereas actually there are a lot of organisations out there who will help, who will be the right place to go to. And you know, you don't have to go out there and take all the credit for these things. Sometimes all you've got to do is put people in contact with the right organisation, the right grouping, and get them the help that they're looking for without actually going down and physically doing it all yourself.
I was interested looking through the notes this morning that I think you'd supplied, that I think you're quite a fan of the Lord Lisvain report, aren't you, into the Isle of Man government?
Yes, I think he says a lot of the things that we as a party have been saying for a long time, a lot of things that I've been saying for quite a while as well, so it's very nice to see that an independent report come to the same conclusions.
But you're talking about the fact that you would like to see Legislative Council popularly elected. Do you not think that that takes away one of the strengths? Because again, it's going to be a beauty contest, and you're going to have people who are more worried about retaining the seats than about doing the right thing, aren't you, if LegCo is popularly elected?
I think the important thing to bear in mind is that as a government, it should be accountable and responsible to the people. And when you don't have a direct public election, it's very difficult then to say they are being held accountable. How do you hold people accountable who don't have to face the electorate, who don't have to stand up and say, this is my decision, this is why I made it, and now I'm going to try and explain that to you. If they know that all they've got to do is convince 24 MHKs they did the right thing, rather than trying to convince their constituents, the actual people, it's a completely different kettle of fish. I think you do need that element of accountability in there.
This is your second time running in a general election. How easy is it to put together a manifesto? This is just a general question, actually, because it seems that most people are saying the same things, and you just sometimes think, well, that's a given, surely. You talk in your draft manifesto about the fact that, you know, we've got to monitor the Brexit situation very carefully. Well, that's like saying we've got to remember to put our socks on in the morning, isn't it?
it is very difficult. It's probably the hardest thing you have to do, actually. It's the least enjoyable part of electioneering. I think the canvassing and the door-to-door, that's brilliant. You get to meet people, you get to engage with them. But actually putting your thoughts down on paper in a way that makes sense is absolutely terrifying. A lot of the things you say, you can't go into a lot of detail, and this is the biggest problem you have when you talk to people. They say, well, what exactly are you going to do?
Yeah.
Well, I'd love to be able to tell you, but without access to all the information that government have, which they don't like sharing, it's very difficult to say, well, I will take this information and this is what I'll do. And you don't want to stand there and make promises and commitments to people that you might not be able to fulfil.
Do you think that you've got realistic aspirations then? Because, you know, we're talking to people who are going to come in and change the world. Are you a bit more realistic, a bit more pragmatic about it?
Yes, I'm not going to change the world. I'll be honest with that from the outset. It's going to be a long, hard slog to get changes through. But the important thing is that I'm committed to doing that. If I've got to spend my entire time, you know, trying to get small changes through, if it's all little bits, little bits, little bits, absolutely fine. That's the only way things are going to get better.
We were talking earlier about the fact that, you know, government is there to facilitate rather than to drive the economy. And that's interesting, because what's your position on the public sector pension shortfall? Because I made the point a couple of times that, you know, the trouble is it's the private sector that's going to have to bail out the public sector as far as that's concerned, isn't it?
I think it is. I think the government have dug themselves into quite a big hole with this. If they'd have addressed this issue 5-10 years ago when they first knew about it, they wouldn't be in such a serious position now. It's not going to be an easy fix. It's not going to be a quick fix. And I think everyone's going to have to bear some of the cost, maybe equally, maybe not equally. I like to use the word fairly. Mm. What that means is entirely up to your own interpretation, I suppose.
All right.
But everyone is going to have to bear that cost. It's a big issue. It's probably the most critical issue the next administration are going to face.
And do you think it's sensible the way that it's being targeted at the moment based on growth in the economy?
I don't think you can rely on something as insubstantial and ephemeral as economic growth. I think they have to turn around and address the key problems, which is there's not enough money going into the scheme and there's too much money coming out of the scheme. That's, in simple terms, that is the short-term problem. In the longer term, they need to close the scheme. They need to move it on to a more sustainable basis, a defined contribution, money purchase basis. You want to protect the benefits people have already earned. That's very, very important. They've paid in, they've worked hard, they deserve those benefits. But going forwards, they can't turn around and say, that's fine, we'll keep this going forever. They have to close that scheme. They have to move it on to something that is more realistic, that is more like what the private sector can afford.
And that's not even being mooted by government. They say it's going to take decades to sort out a problem that's evolved over decades. But, I mean, they're not talking about closing it down, I don't think.
I've not heard that they are. But equally, the longer they leave it before closing it down, the bigger and bigger this ballooning liability is going to get. They have to deal with that quickly.
You mentioned the NHS being over budget. So what's your response to that, to cut down on operations and drugs for sick people?
The NHS was, I think, £9.5 million over budget in the last year, primarily because of spending on agency staff. That was the reason they gave in the Pink Book. So they have serious problems retaining and recruiting staff within the NHS. They need to address that. It's not about cutting down on services. It's about making sure they can hire the right staff at the right levels of pay. And if they address that issue, that will cut down seriously on the over-budgeting they have.
So, and what's the answer to that then? So that's the problem, that they can't retain the right staff. What's the answer? Do we pay them more than the going rate for the job, or do we put all sorts of perks into the...
Well, here's where I'm going to have to hold my hand up and say I don't know. I really don't have an answer to that question. That is a problem that is, I think, being addressed by the current health minister and by the department. And I think they are making progress towards that, but it really needs a good look at. And without access to all the information, without all the detail, I can't give you a solution.
You say that government reserves are down to critically low levels. That's fairly strong language, but isn't that what the reserves were there for?
It's a difficult one to answer. Yes, they're there for a rainy day, but how much do you keep dipping into them before you say enough is enough? And I think we're at this point now where we can't keep dipping into them. There isn't any money left for another rainy day. Mm. So they're banking all their hopes on this economic growth, that everything is going to get better. But if it doesn't, where do we go from here?
And what is the answer? What's the Lib Van's position on this? You know, what's our bright future? What's the light at the end of the tunnel?
Again, there isn't a short term, there isn't an easy fix. It's a big problem that has hit us. They've already gone through 5 years of austerity, 5 years of cuts, and that can't keep going forever either. It's a combination of what money is government spending out, What money is government collecting? Do we need to review our tax? Do we need to review our welfare? What we're suggesting, what I'm suggesting, and I think what the party are also suggesting, is that we set up an independent tax and welfare commission to look at exactly how government is financed, exactly the kind of things that government is spending money on, where can we make, not cuts, but where can we better target the funds that we're getting, and is there a way of raising additional revenue without putting too much pressure on people?
But better targeting means cuts, effectively. I mean, you can better target, but that's not going to save any money. As a government, surely there are two things you can do. You can make more money, or you can save some money from the overall scheme. So where do you see it? I mean, do you disagree with the Chief Minister on his slash and burn policy? Would you get rid of an awful lot of government employees, for example?
I don't think you can do that either. This is the problem with slashing and burning. If you cut loads of the government employees, all of a sudden your unemployment goes up. You've still got to pay for people. You've still got to pay redundancy costs.
But far less, probably.
In the long term, yes, but in the short term, you've still got this. You've still got that immediate hit, and it's the short term that we're really struggling with.
OK. The Lib Van Party doesn't have a very good track record of holding on to its members. So what are the chances of you actually sticking with Lib Van and its core policies if you're elected?
Well, I'm not planning on going anywhere, let's put it that way. They have had issues in the past retaining some members, and I think it's because the way the party used to try and field candidates was try and field as many candidates as they could. What we've decided to do now is really cut down and pick on candidates. We know they're going to stick with us. We know that they're going to be there for the long haul.
I worry a little bit about democracy on the basis that Donald Trump might be the next president of the USA, on the basis that Britain seems to be out of Europe and most people don't like that idea, although the polls would say otherwise. So the concept of democracy, it's not a bad system, but it seems to have its problems. What do you think about the Isle of Man, about our government here, about the way that we run government in the Isle of Man? Do you think that we maybe take democracy too far in asking people for their views about absolutely everything these days?
I think it depends what you mean by taking democracy too far. The consultation documents that come out are most certainly not democratic. They go out, they pick and choose the responses they want, and it doesn't necessarily seem that they listen all the time. So some of these consultations, you wonder why they've put them out in the first place. Mm. Really, democracy does stop and end at the ballot box on the Isle of Man. You get to make a choice once every 4 years for your commissioners, once every 5 years for keys, and that's it. Aside from that, there isn't anything else over here that you can talk about. There is an attempt at the moment to bring some more direct democracy to the island, which I think is admirable. I think it should be explored.
But isn't that part of the problem, the fact that we go to the ballot box every 5 years? So, you know, MHKs are very much keeping a weather eye on what's popular and what's not. If you're elected, would you be able to make difficult decisions that actually weren't terribly popular, but that you knew were the right ones for the island?
Yes. Simple answer to that. I have no concerns about being popular or not. It's never been a particular preference of mine.
But surely it's something you've got to be if you're a politician. If you're looking for people to vote for you, you've got to be popular.
I think there's a difference between people understanding that you're doing the right thing and liking that you're doing it. I think the important thing is when you make these difficult decisions, as long as you explain them to people beforehand, often, give them enough time to question you, to address any concerns they've got, then I think you will be able to make those decisions while still retaining enough support. It's not a problem, because you can't go in there just to make popular decisions.
All right. Housing is something that you focused on in your newsletter. What would you do to improve housing provision across the whole of the island?
The first thing they need to do is the Department of Infrastructure needs to get out of providing housing. It should all be provided by the local authorities. There's no sense having an entity that is trying to regulate housing also providing housing itself. The second thing they need to do is they need to introduce a fair system of means testing onto public sector housing, because that is the only way that they're going to make sure that the rent levels can ever be made sustainable. Over the last 5 years, rents have gone up by nearly 40%, which is absolutely incredible. There are so many people within local authority housing that has just been a massive shock to them. Mm. You know, if your mortgage went up by 40%, you'd be unable to cope.
And but wasn't that because public sector rents were too cheap for too long, and therefore they had to catch up all of a sudden?
They were too low, and they had been maintained at a very low level. But the problem is, you can't say, well, they've always been too low, so let's just bump them up, and expect people to be able to suddenly overnight be able to afford that increase. They needed to bring in a system of means testing to say, look, we're going to put these rents up, but if you genuinely can't afford it, there will be provision in there to help you. And that's the thing they're missing.
I'm not a politician, and you hope to be a politician, so explain this to me. On the basis that bricks and mortar seems to be a pretty good investment, and always has, why isn't government spending a big chunk of money on building houses to sell on to people, to enhance the first-time buyer scheme? We seem to have an awful lot of young people, a lot of Manx people, who can't get on the housing ladder. Surely that's exactly the kind of thing that government could step in and do, because, apart from anything, it's a cast-iron investment.
I have no way of disagreeing with you there. I think the first-time buyer scheme needs to be expanded and needs to be rethought, because it's not working the way that it's intended. So they need to find ways of making sure that there is access to affordable housing for people who want to buy, people who want to rent. I mean, renting in the private sector over here is still very expensive. They've not addressed that. Housing is a big issue, and it is something that government can directly influence, and they should be putting more effort into it.
OK. Lib Van Party is calling for the health system to stay free from charge at the point of delivery. But the fact about that is that you've already said that the NHS in the Isle of Man is massively over budget. So is the system that you're advocating, is it sustainable?
I think it is. I think it's an underlying core principle of the NHS that it is free at the point of delivery, which means anyone can use it. Anyone can turn up at the doctor or the hospital and have that service without having to worry about how do I pay for this. That is unequivocally the most important thing you have to protect with the NHS.
OK. Tell me what you think are the big challenges over the next 5 years, because we've got Brexit, and, you know, that's a bit of a waiting brief, isn't it? We've got the public sector pensions. There are a number of things, challenges that the Isle of Man faces. I'm not saying problems. I'm using the marketing speak and saying, calling them challenges. But you know, what are they, and how are we going to address them?
I think they are challenges, because if you look at them as problems, then what you're looking to do is try and get rid of them. Whereas if you look at them as challenges, you're trying to find a way of making them overcome. You can overcome them, you know, deal with them, address them, and get them dealt with. The biggest issues, biggest challenges that we have really coming, you've already mentioned the two that I would put at the top of the list, the public sector pension reform, it's got to be right up there, and Brexit. The problem with those two is they are often quite contradictory. Public sector pensions need to be dealt with straight away, whereas Brexit, we don't know where the UK is going to go. We need to make sure we're involved, but it's 4 or 5 years down the line before any real decisions are going to be made. So they are big problems, but they are completely separate problems in some ways.
You're an accountant, so on the basis that the Isle of Man doesn't have enough money in the system, as far as government's concerned, wouldn't it be a simple thing to just add a couple of percentage points to the income tax rate and do it that way?
That is an option. That really is, and this is what I was talking about earlier with the Tax and Welfare Commission. We need an independent body to look at our tax system, to look at our welfare system, and to turn around and say, look, do we have to put income tax up? Nobody wants to. I don't want to, certainly, but if it's the only way forward, it's something we have to be willing to consider. I've said this when I put a letter out to my constituents in Ramsey, saying you have to be willing to have the difficult conversations. You might not like them, you might not like the answers, but if you shy away from them, you're never going to solve the problems that we have.
What's your take on the tax cap? Do you think that that's a beneficial thing for the island, or do you think it's an unfair system?
It's unfair the way that it's currently structured. The principle that you want to attract high net worth individuals here by capping their tax, I can understand that. But there should be some kind of economic driver linked to it. So, yes, you can have the tax cap, but only if you're employing X number of people, or only if you're generating so much wealth for the Isle of Man. That's what they should have done, rather than just being a carte blanche to come here and get away with paying tax.
Right. If you're going to be a national politician, you need to look at things outside Ramsey. So let's just talk about the promenade for a second, and not the Moorag promenade, Douglas promenade. What do you make of the debacle that's been unfolding for years on that?
I think it's typical, really, of this last administration to make a decision, then change their mind, then change their mind again, then publish something that everyone disagrees with, and then change their mind. It's a farce. It really is. You know, they should have made a decision at the outset and either decided, yes, this is the right thing and we're doing it, making an unpopular decision, or they should have put it out to consultation, heard what people wanted to say, and then went with the public. You can't do one or the other. Mm-hmm. This is a government that is afraid to make unpopular decisions, and that's what you end up with.
And why is that, do you think? Because, I mean, people often level that accusation and say they're useless, they don't know what they're doing. But, you know, I'm fairly convinced still, after years and years of covering politics in the Isle of Man, that the majority of people in the House of Keys and LegCo are hard-working people who've got the interests of the Isle of Man very much at heart. So, you know, how is it going so wrong? And is it part of the system? Is there a systematic problem?
I think it comes back down to being afraid to make unpopular choices. I don't disagree. I believe most of the vast majority of members of Keys and LegCo are hardworking and dedicated people. They're in it for the right reasons. But when they're afraid to stand up and say, look, this is what I believe and this is what I'm going to do, and this I'm going to follow it through right to its conclusion,
And why afraid? Because politicians are too close to the electorate, because we've got everybody's names and phone numbers in the book, because people personalise problems. I mean, just listening to this programme, you'll hear that various members of the Council of Ministers are slated on a regular basis, whereas in the UK, it probably wouldn't be as personalised.
Part of it may be that, but I really think it is more about the fear of not being re-elected. It's not a fear of not being liked. It is just more a fear of failing to be re-elected. That's the biggest problem, and they're more concerned sometimes with their own careers.
I can understand the right choice. I can understand that in the last year of an administration, but I mean, you know, we've had the same problems all the way through, haven't we? Right from the start of it all.
Yeah, people have long memories. I think it's a bit naive to think that politicians are only concerned about getting re-elected in the last year of their term. I think that they are spending 5 years making sure they're trying to get re-elected.
We've got 10 seconds left. Tell us why the people of Ramsey should vote for you in September.
Well, I'm committed. I'm dedicated. I'm willing to have the difficult conversations, and I'm willing to stick with my decisions. I'm also quite enthusiastic. And the most important thing is that I will never turn around and vote against my conscience. So anything that I tell you that I'm going to do, I'm going to do.
All right, Liberal Vanin Party candidate for Ramsey, Laurie Hooper, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks very much.
Keep up to date with the latest House of Keys general election 2016 coverage on manxradio.com.